In 1965, writes Carol Ganim, the Catholic Church was at the top of its game. It was a bonanza time in the Catholic world where belief and the way to heaven were certain. The vocation tree was ripe with new nuns, brothers, and priests. But all that was soon to change massively. Society was changing rapidly, writes Ganim, but the church was not. The exception was that religious women were the first to catch on to the deep currents of change in such areas as civil rights, feminism, and social sexual mores. Carol Ganim took first vows in 1959, the year I was born. She left the convent in 1972, married and had children, taught college, and became a university administrator. She has recently released a book, which she says is a counterweight to the Vatican's investigation of women's religious communities in 2009. Being Out of Order, she says, tells that story from the point of view of those who lived it, loved it, and left it. Carol joins me now, and we're also joined by Luciana O'Keefe, who is also a former nun and one of the prophetic women Carol interviewed for her book, and also a friend of mine. And so welcome, both of you, to Women's Magazine.
Thank you, Kate.
So, Carol, you knew from a very young age that you wanted to be a nun, even though your family was not all that religious. How did that come about?
I have no idea. I mean, I just remember that as a child, I just liked to go to church. And I also saw the movie, The Song of Bernadette, and there was Bernadette praying in front of a bush of some type, and God came and said something. And so I wanted to do this. My parents were not anti-religion. They just didn't go every week. We were Maronite Rite, which is an Eastern rite of the Catholic Church, which is a little different from the Roman rite in that the liturgy was conducted in Aramaic.
Your family was from Lebanon.
My grandparents, yes. So, but we had a large great influence of the Lebanese culture when I was growing up.
So you talk in the book, though, about sort of a religious moment that you had that kind of sealed the deal for you. Can you talk about that?
Yeah. And it's hard to talk about that because it seems kind of silly sometimes. But I was walking to catechism, which was the religious instruction after school for kids that went to public school. And this light came through the clouds. And I remember standing there looking at the light thinking, that's God. He's going right through me. And that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to always be a person that God's light goes through.
And Lucianne, what was that call to vocation like for you?
It was different. I didn't see any light. I was in a Catholic girls' high school, and I was a member of what was called then the Sodality, which was a group dedicated to the Blessed Virgin. And they would recommend going to Mass more frequently than just on Sunday. And so I did that because I was being a good member. And somewhere along the way, I felt as though maybe I had a vocation. And then I thought, well, if I don't follow this idea, I might be denying a vocation. So I thought, well, I'll go in and then I'll find out I don't have a vocation and I can leave in good conscience. And so I went in and stayed for 22 years.
Did it live up to your expectations when you went in?
It was wonderful. I was very happy there. I was pleased with everything. I loved the meditations that we were instructed in, and I loved the people that I was with. They were wonderful, bright, imaginative, full of laughter. And then eventually we were trained to be teachers, and so I loved teaching. So it did answer more than my expectations, and I was quite happy doing the work of the order.
Well, I will get to then why you decided to give it up. But I want to ask Carol, what was great about being in a women's religious community for you?
Many things. There was wonderful companionship. There were women who were thinking as I was and wanting to strive for goodness and, justice and religious faith. I love the prayer life. I love the liturgy. Also was trained to be a teacher. I was one of the luckier ones in that when Sister Formation came about, our group was one of the first to go through college in 4 consecutive years, actually 5. But the nuns older than I had to go on Saturdays and summers. And then I also was privileged in that I was sent to get my doctorate, which was wonderful because I went to Fordham University in New York and earned my master's and doctorate. And that was a whole world of you know, education and intellectual vitality. And being in New York and getting on the subway and running down to Broadway and seeing plays and going to concerts. And
all while wearing your habit?
Yes.
And what was that like when you encountered people who were not religious, who maybe had prejudices and stereotypes about Catholics and nuns, you know, at something like a Broadway play?
Well, in those days, in the 60s, the world was very Catholic. And I don't remember any particular looks or insults or anything. I remember, I don't put this in my book, but I remember once in being in a subway, a man kept rubbing up against me. And I didn't know what to do, so I didn't do anything.
And how was it decided that you would go and get a doctorate? And what was the doctorate in? And sort of what was the goal of the church in making that decision?
Well, it wasn't the church. It was the community. We owned and operated and still do Ursuline College in Cleveland, Ohio. And the faculty had to be trained. The way I found out I was going to Fordham was that we got an obedience once a year, a little white letter that said you were going to do this the coming year. I got mine on the day we were going into an 8-day retreat of silence. And it said, your obedience is to do the will of God. No details. And I spent 8 days in silence sweating, thinking, what am I going to do? Are they sending me home? Am I going to be punished? Do I have to keep sewing those horrible little red numbers on everything? What is it going to be? At the end of the retreat, after 8 days, the superior said to me, I'm going to send you to Fordham. So that was the decision process. And I had to be there in a month.
You made reference to something that I actually hadn't heard of, which was the network of Catholic women's colleges that existed in the 1960s. And talk a little about those, because I suspect most of our listeners also probably didn't know about that. And you say that they were a sort of unconsciously progressive influence.
Yes, there were many Catholic women's colleges in that time. They were all founded by religious orders in order to train women and to prepare teachers and nurses or whatever subject they were teaching. We were never told to be feminists. I don't think the word was even popular at that time. We were told that we had to teach other women to be good mothers and good wives and to function well in society. We weren't told that we were to prepare women to take their place in the world and to fight for equality and all that. But in fact, that's what happened. In fact, once you educate somebody, they can't go back. And we were educated to be independent thinkers, scholars, students, teachers, whatever, and also good mothers and wives, perhaps, and good women. But the Catholic women's colleges, I think, in that era, prepared women to be part of the feminist movement, to fight for the justice and equality, and not to be afraid, because we didn't have that many men in our world ordering us about.
So let's go back to some of the things that were hardest about being in the order, and presumably some of those things eventually led you both to leave, you know, a world that just listening to you sounds kind of great. And I'm like, where can I sign up? And yet, you know, as you say in the book, a vast majority of women who having the options that they have now have not made that choice, that the Catholic Church has gone, that there's gone from over 175,000 women in religious communities in 1965 to about 55,000 today in the U.S. So, you know, talk about some of what made it hard.
My life was never hard on a day-to-day basis. What led me to leave, and I assume Lucienne would say the same, is that I began to realize that we were living in a total institution in which we had, as a religious community, as part of the larger Catholic Church, we had no power and no status. In the Catholic Church, for example, there are no women priests, and that's a big issue today and always it has been for a number of years. Not that being a priest is the most wonderful thing in the world, but if you're in an organization that's hierarchical, which we were, and you could not be a part of that hierarchy, that was excluding you. So as a patriarchy and a hierarchy, the church was saying to women, you are to be subservient. You're to be the little women who do the work, educate our kids, but don't ask to have any power. The sacraments are those ceremonies which kind of document the life, moments of life that are important to people. Marriage, baptism, confirmation, death, all those moments are sanctified by a sacrament, a sign of God's blessing. So the men had holy orders. They were ordained as priests. Women who became religious made vows, which are not sacraments. They are promises to live according to poverty, chastity, and obedience. Last week, a priest in Australia who was speaking out for women's ordination was excommunicated from the church because he said women should be ordained. How can an educated, mature, adult woman who has responsibilities and who has education and who understands what's going on in the world give in to that kind of abuse and domination? You know, I think that as the years went on, most of us rejected it. And we were very affected by the feminist movement. I see us as a prototypical case for feminism. We were a select group of people easily identified as women who were still living, wearing the clothes of our medieval foremothers. We were obeying rules. We were under a strict male-controlled hierarchy, although within the communities, the superiors were women, but still that was always under the bishop or whoever was around that was male. I can't give you a moment or a date, but I think it started to dawn on all of us that we had vowed our lives to God, and yet we were not being treated fairly in terms of the church. But it wasn't only that. It was, I'm a woman, my friends out there are women, we are being affected by all of the movements of the women's movement. The Betty Friedan took off her apron, you know, and said, I'm not going to be a housewife anymore, it's not fair. So it wasn't just nuns, but I think our case is so stark. I mean, it's so identifiable. There were many, many factors that came into it, I believe. The vows, for example, the vows of poverty, chastity, and obedience are very lofty. There's good parts to them. To be poor is to give up, as St. Francis of Assisi, the model for poverty in the church, did, to give up worldly goods in order to be free to take care of people and to give everything to God and not be attached to the things of the world. That's okay. But in fact, we were never really poor. We had total security. Poverty, as I began to realize, it wasn't about not having 18 different cell phones. Of course, we didn't have them in those days, but or TVs or jewels. It was about security. You know, we always had a house and a bed and food and everything we needed to survive, education. We weren't poor. Chastity. I began to realize that that was depriving me, and I think us, of a certain human quality of caring about others and feeling deeply. And I use the term hearth throughout my book, which was an important term for me, symbolizing or reflecting on the need for warmth and comfort and attachment and deep human encumbrances, which is a phrase I use that phrase in my book, and a friend of mine read the book, and she said, I really like that phrase, and I thought, I didn't even remember it. Now I really like it. You know, that deep human connection to another person that isn't just as sister or teacher or colleague, but as lover or mother or deep friend or something that makes demands on me. We had very good friends. I mean, Lucienne and I have been friends all these years. But I don't have to take care of Lucienne. I don't have to feed her or worry about her when she's sick. What I saw missing in our lives were the deep responsibilities and attachments that call us out of ourselves. And, of course, sexual behavior was also, you know, we didn't, most of us at that time, we didn't know about sex. You know, we were pretty much innocent when we went to the convent in the 50s. And we started to realize little by little that there were other things in the world, you know, besides friendship, and there were physical elements of existence that really made us human and more womanly, and also put us into the real world of human emotions. And then obedience, the same thing. We're all obedient to laws and rules and so on, but to have such strict obedience, although it helps you to be stronger and disciplined, but it also deprives us of responsibility. You know, I never had to worry about paying a bill or turning off the lights or making sure the lawn was mowed. It was all done by somebody. It might have been us, but we were told to do it. You know, and so that doesn't make for maturity, I don't think.
There's been a lot of talk recently about Pope Francis and some of his statements that people have seen as quite revolutionary. One of the things I wanted to ask about was the fact that even so, even with all of the statements that he's made about easing certain condemnations or restrictions on certain things, the prescription on women priests, women as priests, you know, remains really untouchable in the Catholic Church. And yet, as you say, there are a number of women who want very badly to be ordained. Why is it so important to the Church not to have women be ordained as priests? You know, almost every other religion has been able to incorporate, mm-hmm. you know, women as rabbis, ministers, and Episcopal priests, and, you know, everybody seems to be getting along okay. Lucienne?
I think it has something to do with power. It's hard for them to see powerful women. It's even hard for these people who are doing the examination of the way nuns are living to deal with these powerful religious women who are so intelligent and so strong in their responses. And I think they believe that if ordination was permitted, then a whole bunch of other women would emerge as these powerful leaders and who could call them on their weaknesses. And even though other religions seem to have crossed that creek very easily, there's always this idea in the Church, but that we're the best. I mean, we're the religion.
I think it'll happen. It has to happen. It's going to happen. And Pope Francis right now is only in office 6 months. He is making statements about attitudes towards people and power and ritual. And he may or may not include in that a change in his opinion of the role of women. And whether he does or not, it will change when that generation of old guys in dresses goes away. And I think they confuse doctrine with tradition. And one of the attacks that are the challenges or against the Leadership Conference of Women Religious, which is being investigated as being not doctrinaire enough, is false. They talk about doctrine and say the women are not obeying the doctrines of the Church because they're supporting same-sex marriage, they're supporting birth control, they supported verbally the affordable health care, Obamacare, even though the Catholic bishops said no, and the women said yes, because it will not change the regs as they are now. And secondly, we work with the people. We're not sitting in offices making rules. Those are not doctrines. Those are practices. Those are moral behaviors that grew up out of a culture. And the culture is changing. Soon the Church will change too, but it's always a little behind. You know, Galileo was just officially forgiven a few years ago.
Do you think that the mainstream media is making too much of the importance of some of Pope Francis's recent statements, or do you really see this as potentially being the harbinger of some big changes in the Church?
I think it's a harbinger. I don't know if they're making too much of it, but don't forget the Catholic Church is the biggest church in the whole world with how many billions of people, most of whom are now in the third world. So I think this is big news for people to have a pope come in and be so dramatically different from his predecessors. And I think it's good. I mean, it's only good.
Lucienne, do you agree?
I agree mostly. I have this idea that when he's making more or less progressive changes, it has to do with sex, you know, abortion and celibacy. And I don't know whether he's going to change his mind about whether the nuns, for instance, need to be examined. We know that the priest's behavior over the last however long has been horrific, and they're not exorcised about that. So what they have to do is to deflect from how bad it is and say, oh, well, the nuns are doing bad things too. And so I'm not sure that him saying, well, we shouldn't focus so much on abortion is exactly progressive enough for me. It'll only prove it to me when he actually does something. And I haven't seen him do anything about it yet, except that he does live simply himself. And he does talk to people who are poor. So those are the kind of things I'm looking for, because I want the church to be a liberation church. And I think he's far away from that.
Well, as I told you two before we started, I've always been fascinated by the Catholic Church, and especially by nuns growing up as a Jewish kid in the South. So it's been a real pleasure to talk to you both. I've found this a really interesting and lively conversation. Being Out of Order is the book. The Prophetic Generation of Nuns and Sisters. Carol Ganem is the author and has been my guest, along with my friend Lucienne O'Keefe, a former nun, lifelong activist who lives here in the Bay Area. So thank you both so much.
Thank you, Kate.
To find out how to get a copy of Being Out of Order, go to vandermeer.com. And I'll put that link on our blog, kpfawomensmag.blogspot.com, where you can also find archived segments from our past shows and information about all of our guests today.